This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligi Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
What a sports weekend and what a week ahead. We get to discuss it all. Chris Ranji, along with me, Tom Ackerman. Big guest list today. Monday means Greg Amsinger, MLB Network, Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne, and marathoner, author, radio host, blues expert Amy Mark Scores on the show at 12:45. How you doing, pal?
Technically, we congratulate Amy on her participation, but technically she did lose.
She did not win.
She did not win the marathon, the Go St. Louis Marathon. She's a loser.
It's tough.
Honestly.
That's tough.
If you think about it.
How you doing, buddy?
Good, man. Hey, look, 2-3, Cardinals lost. I'm just, as I've said a million times, I don't know how. There are moments where I get lost in the game and I'm rooting for the win. Obviously, I want them to win, but I know what this season is about, and I cannot help but to really be excited watching Jordan Walker. And I know that we've talked a lot about him, and it's almost like, hey, guys, you're wearing it out. But dude, he's been incredible. And I know it's 2.5 weeks. I know this isn't a full season, not even a full month. I know it. But I think we have to just, we have to really accept that what is going on is pretty special in the moment. And there is an opportunity for him to continue to build on this. Don't think he's going to be 1,000+ OPS guy all season, but that's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is somebody who will actually improve over the course of a full season from what he's been doing so far in a Cardinals uniform. And to me, it's really difficult not to be greatly encouraged by what we're seeing from him.
It's staggering. This is the one that jumps out at me. He has 7 home runs. It's more than he had all of last season.
That's right. He didn't get his 6th until August, I think.
He has 7 home runs. He leads the major leagues in that category, which is not shocking because 7 is a lot. What's shocking is it's coming off the bat of Jordan Walker, and it's not just the home runs either. It's the pitch recognition. You can just see. Now, he struck out a couple times yesterday, but you can see most of the time he's letting those down in the zone go. He's waiting for his pitch. He ended the game leading Major League Baseball with home runs, 41 total bases, homered in 6 of his last 8 games. He's only the 4th Cardinals player with 7 or more home runs in the first 15 games of the season. Not talking age or, you know, length of career. We're talking about ever. The others are Albert Pujols, Scott Rolen, and Mark McGwire. He's hit 6 of his 7 home runs with the Cardinals tied or trailing, which tells you something else about the team. But anyway, he's scored a run in 6 straight games. He just does it all. He's leading him in every category except for walks. That's Ivan Herrera's category. He's actually 2nd in baseball. Herrera is in walks with 14. And Weatherholt leads the team with 3 stolen bases. Otherwise, Walker has swept the offensive categories for the Cardinals.
Nobody is hitting the ball harder in baseball. No, almost nobody is barreling it more than he does, or has the bat speed, or with the exit velo. So when he is making contact, these aren't cheap. These aren't cheap home runs. They are not cheap doubles. He is hitting the ball very, very hard. So, yeah, I mean, I'd like the strikeout rate to be a little bit lower. But here's the thing. If he's hitting for power, the strikeout rate is probably going to be relatively high anyway. There are very few unicorns in the game that have low strikeout rates and they hit for a ton of power. I just need him to do one of those. Well, you know, like I would prefer for him to be the home run guy. You know, it's nice to be the low strikeout guy, but give me the home run guy because that's the thing the Cardinals haven't had for a couple of years.
We are also being, you're hearing us on KMOX, we are also being viewed on YouTube, X, and Facebook. We have over 100 viewers already in our first few seconds here. PacPat618 says, good afternoon, guys. I really look forward to this show during my lunchtime at work. We appreciate that. We think that is part of the formula as to why this show has been successful. People have made it appointment listening during lunch, which, man, I can't thank you enough for that. Real third man, slow down there, fella.
Now what's
he says
saying?
The division is there for the taking.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not going there.
I'm
the Pirates
there
lead the Central. The Pittsburgh Pirates lead the Central by a half game over the Reds and a game over the Cardinals and Brewers, and the Cubs are bringing up the rear two back. Cubs have problems. They have injured pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look right, but we'll deal with them when we deal with them. Right now, the Cardinals are 8-7 and just sort of plugging along here. They've played five series. They've won three of them.
Now, let me just say, I can envision a situation here at the end of the year where the Pirates finish ahead of the Cardinals in the standings. That could very well be true. That's not the important thing, though. It just, that's not what this season is about. This season is, again, and I do think it's different than the runway season that we had last year. We had to keep saying the word over and over again, you know, runway. It's similar to that, but it's not, because what we're doing now, I think, is you're giving newer players an opportunity. Of course, they're giving Jordan Walker the runway. They're giving Nolan Gorman the runway. That applies to those two guys, but that's not really who it applies. It doesn't apply to J.J. Weatherholt. It doesn't apply to Burleson in that way. I mean, this is a different team than last year. I do think it's probably a better team than last year, mm-hmm. but the important thing about the 2026 Cardinals is, how much progress do we see out of Walker? How much progress, if any, do we see out of Gorman? Does Weatherholt get a year under his belt and have the thing look pretty good by the time we get to September, which helps him build on that for the following year? These are all really great goals to have for this team, because this is all about the future for them. It doesn't mean you're trying to lose now or don't care if you win. It's just, this is what this season is all about, is getting the Cardinals ready to really be a winner and do so more than just one-off seasons here and there. Do so consistently.
And there will be some guys that will go backwards. Matt Swanson is one of those.
Yep.
And, you know, I asked Heim yesterday if he thought that Swanson was somebody that could fix what's wrong up here, or does he need to go to Memphis? He said, I think he can fix it up here. And they have not discussed sending him to Memphis, although he would never leave that off the table necessarily. He's going to leave everything as a possibility, but for right now, that is not a discussion. Aaron thinks that Herrera is horrible. I thought Herrera was our best bat. I'd give it a little time, Aaron. He is your best bat. Matt says, what a revelation Ramon Arias has been as well. Great signing by Heim. I'd agree. Nice glove. Can play multiple positions and occasionally give you some power, which we saw. He hit a couple of bombs in one game already this season. But it is going to get interesting here. You're going to have players come up and down. Not a ton of movement yet, but you will get some of that. And you're going to have players go through ups and downs. And as we just indicated, Jordan Walker probably will be one of those. But enjoy the ride while it's happening now.
Yeah, but at least he's got this to build on. So if he does, and when he does struggle, because it's going to happen, I'd be stunned if it doesn't, he can at least, and they can help him realize, hey, remember what you did in April? That's in there. That's in you. So if there's ever a moment of doubt with him, this should be something that he can use to build moving forward.
We are going to talk to Greg Amsinger about all of these topics and more coming up. He is standing by. I can't wait to talk to him at the headquarters of MLB Network in Secaucus, New Jersey.
A century strong, the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Bayo's pitch is swung on, and there's a high fly ball. That's hit to deep left center field. Back to the track, the wall. It's a goner. Walker hits a home run to get the Cardinals on the board. An eight-game hitting streak with six home runs out of his 12 hits.
Jordan Alexander Walker. He has seven home runs. He has 14 RBIs. He is crushing it right now.
You know, when you're getting all three of your names used, you've either done something great or you're in serious trouble.
You're in big trouble, mister.
It's one of those two.
We welcome in, I don't know Greg's middle name.
What's wrong with Gregory?
Greg Amsinger joins us.
Is it Alan?
George.
George.
Gregory George. George. Ooh, wow. I like
Gregory
that.
George.
How regal.
About this? Funny story. That was my first name for like 6 hours. Huh. And my dad always wanted a son named George. My mom was holding me, and she, no offense to any man named George, she started crying that she just named her baby George.
Oh my!
So they had to change all of the paperwork, and that they made it my middle name.
That's
wow.
Very funny.
My dad was between two. If it was a boy, he got to make the call. So he said it was either going to be Thomas or Roy. I was very close to being Roy.
Roy Ackerman.
Roy Ackerman. It's not
like
bad.
Wow, well, that sounds like an anchorman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Roy Ackerman here with the latest news.
That's right.
I like that.
How about Jordan Walker? I mean, what's the buzz over there at MLB Network?
You know, he's on pace for 76 home runs. How great is that? we said of all the players the Cardinals have, there are very few that they have that could be a superstar, that have the absolute talent to be a superstar. And what is that? That is someone who can be out in front on a breaking pitch and with one arm accidentally hit a home run. There are probably 20 players in the sport that are strong enough to do that. Jordan Walker is one of them. He doesn't have to put a perfect swing on a baseball for it to be the most productive swing of the game. What you're seeing is a much more disciplined hitter recognizing he doesn't need to do too much. He's letting the pitcher come into his zone. His chase rate is down dramatically. And his discipline is leading to fireworks, which is so wonderful to watch.
Just so, again, watching this and from, you know, you've got access to some really great former players who all know the game very well, just like you do. Do they feel like this is sustainable for him? And I don't necessarily mean 1,000 OPS or anything like that, but and clearly not 75 home runs, but is the production, the real actual production, is that sustainable for him?
I think Harold Reynolds is going to take a deep dive. We're on live after the game today, so around 6:40 p.m. Eastern, we'll be on television. He's going to look at the adjustments that Jordan has made. And I think the point of his breakdown tape will be that, yes, this should lead to a much more consistent offensive force. And what people need to recognize is that Jordan Walker isn't, yes, statistically, it looks like he's playing out of his mind. Physically, he's probably swinging less. He's got a more rhythmic swing. So his body doesn't feel like he's doing more. When he was struggling and swinging at everything in the dirt, his body probably felt like it was a physical wreck, right? He's doing less at the plate. He's much more mentally disciplined. And I think to answer your question, what we're going to show today, Harold Reynolds is going to show his productivity is sustainable if he remains this disciplined at the plate. Less is more for Jordan Walker, and it's working.
Yeah, he's thinking about fewer things except what pitch is coming and what can I see out there, and thinking good, positive thoughts. And you know what else? There is no, not that it existed before, but there is no fear of being sent down for really most of these guys. Don't you think, Greg? I mean, they're going to let these guys play, and they're going to let them play all year.
For 3 years, St. Louis Cardinal baseball, to your point, Tom, felt like a 162-game AAU basketball tryout. It is hard for professional athletes to deal with the grind of 162. Their family and friends, they live and die on every pitch, every at bat. It is a mental grind. Then you're looking over your shoulder for 162. It's impossible to weigh all of that stress, to commit to these guys and say, Jordan, you're playing every day. As long as you're healthy, you're playing every day. If you hit 175, that's on you, man. But you cannot look back at 2026 and say the organization didn't give me a shot. And all of the guys they've committed to this year are going to have to look themselves in the mirror at the end of the year. Am I good enough? Because it's not the organization that's holding them back. They are investing all around the diamond. Von Herrera, Gorman, we've got Jordan Walker, Sid JC's playing a lot. Victor Scott, this is your season, man. Go get it. Look around the lineup. JJ, whether you're a rookie, your leash is going to be a little longer, but this is a full commitment to your position players, which we have not seen in years past. For a few guys, they were committed to. But for the most part, it felt like an ongoing AAU tryout, which could be exhausting over a summer.
Do you think the calculus is a little different for Weatherholt because he is a rookie, because he's their number one guy? For this season coming in, that maybe they want to be careful with. They don't want him to let it get too far down the road where it doesn't look very good, and you know, trying to keep the bad thoughts out. Could they play it a little more comfortably with him, you think?
Yeah, I think they're committed to him. I think if there is an adjustment they may make, they might take him out of the leadoff spot if he starts to struggle to get on base. I agree with you. I don't think they want him to go an extended period of time where he's slumping dramatically. He's not going to be sent down. in any way. They start the clock. They're fully invested. He's a first-round guy. The night of the draft, they believe they got the best player in that draft, and you can make the case maybe they did. I think this kid's approach is so mature for his age that if there is a rookie that I feel 100% confident will bounce out of any slump, it's J.J. Weatherholt. He just doesn't have many cheap at-bats. So I think he's a pro's pro. Of all the things the Cardinals are worried about, J.J. Weatherholt is at the bottom of that list.
No question. What about catcher? So Pedro Pais hasn't looked like himself. Joel Pozo doesn't get a lot of run there. Herrera's had six starts behind the plate. And then you got Jimmy Crooks sitting there in the minor leagues having a nice start. I did ask Haim about it yesterday, about the fans kind of clamoring for Crooks, and he said, I'm glad it's a topic. But he suggested that they are willing to let this season play out a little bit longer before they make any decision like that.
There are teams that do not have the catching depth the St. Louis Cardinals have. And there are two organizations that you can go poach catching talent from. Cardinals being one, Baltimore Orioles being two. If the Orioles don't turn things around, I know they have an extra year of control of Adley Rutschman, they're going to move him. I mean, Samuel Basayo, they invested $60-plus million in the guy. He's DHing at the moment. That's not how you develop your catcher of the future. You also drafted two catchers in the first round in last year's draft. The writing's on the wall. They have to move Adley Rutschman. Adley's got high aspirations in terms of his monetary value. I don't think that they believe that he's going to be a $200 million catcher. I think he gets traded. Adley will probably be the number one target over anyone the Cardinals have unless they dangle Herrera. But I have questions regarding that because Herrera has a significant role on this team as a two-hole hitter, as your best offensive player. That's usually who hits second. I just don't see them parting ways with Herrera. So do you trade Pozo? Do you move one of the young players in a package to get maybe a veteran-laden starter if you think that you're in the mix? I think the Cardinals are in the driver's seat because they have so much depth at this position. But I'm glad you pointed out, Tom, that Herrera's made six starts, because there were so many people that cast doubt over Herrera's catching abilities. And I don't know about you, but has he looked like a complete disaster behind the plate? I don't think he has. His arm isn't plus-plus, totally understand that. But he's proving he can catch a big league game. And with that bat, his value is massive all across the league. So the Cardinals can do what they want. And if they want to strike this year and try to see if they can snag a postseason spot, they will have the catching inventory to make that happen.
Greg Amsinger, does the way the first 2.5 or so weeks of the season played out and some of the developments that have happened with you've got Christian Yelich, who looks to be injured. They're expecting bad news on him. The Cubs have lost Cade Horton for the season, it looks like. And right now, the Pirates lead the division, but has anything in the first 2.5 or so weeks changed the way you've looked at the NL Central going into it?
I really didn't believe in the Chicago Cubs this year. Kyle Tucker's first half was massive. Pete Crow Armstrong's first half last year was massive. Both players were non-existent in the second half. And now we're wondering if PCA is the first half PCA or the second half PCA. The numbers don't really bear out that he is playing like a superstar right now. I don't know. I don't think Alex Bregman is a superstar player anymore. I don't. He's had a great career. And then their rotation, they just lost their highest ceiling starter. Cade Horton was, to me, of all the guys, even if Justin Steele is healthy, if you have a game one, game seven postseason series, Cade Horton's the guy that you want to get the ball from all the guys in that rotation. So you got a bunch of number threes. I love the Cincinnati Reds. I really do. Their offense is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. I look up and down the lineup. I love every name, but they're not clicking. Matt McClain went from if there was a spring training MVP, he would have won it. I mean, he hit over 500 with seven home runs, and now he's struggling. And Terry Francona was a player's manager, is trying to get him to go. And Ellie De La Cruz has hit a few home runs. But you take away Sal Stewart, the rookie at first base, that's one of the worst lineups we see in baseball right now. So the Pittsburgh Pirates with Ryan O'Hearn and Brandon Lau coming over teaching these guys how to win, Gregory Soto looking terrific in the back end of their bullpen, and Paul Skenes is the weak link in the rotation with an ERA over 5. That scares you a little bit, right? So the Pirates look really good. O'Neill Cruz is on a tear. I still think the Cardinals will be in the mix. I said this before opening day, that this is not a rebuild in any way. This is a winning team. The record will be above 500. And in September, we'll be talking about whether or not the Cardinals can sneak in with either a wild card or win the division, because I just think there's so much parity in the National League. The NL East has stepped back. The NL West, take away the Dodgers, has stepped back. The Pivetta injury for the Padres is a massive blow. Matter of fact, I think they're going to make a major trade to get some starting pitching depth. Even though they're 10-6, I'm very worried about the San Diego Padres. So I'm looking around the National League, and I don't think it's a one-bid division. I don't think you have to win the NL Central to sneak in. So it's going to be a very entertaining season in the Central and specifically in St. Louis.
Lindenwood and KMOX alum Greg Amsinger on the Gas House Gang. What do you have? What time are you on MLB Network today?
6:40 p.m. Eastern, around that time after the game that we're airing. And we'll be leading up to big inning at 8 p.m. Eastern. And it'll be me, Harold, Dan, goofing off, having fun. I'm hoping they don't make us get up and walk. I fell yesterday playing golf.
Oh, no.
And when you're in your 40s, yeah. Guys, you know this. When you fall, you call your friends, you tell them about it. My knee, I feel like it's sprained, it's swollen. I fell down a tee box.
Oh,
and I wasn't drinking, I promise.
Oh, I believe Greg. It. I mean, I woke up sore yesterday. I'm like, what did I do? I walked the dogs and I put together a screen door. Like, why am I sore? Like, what the heck is going on?
Father time wins. Undefeated, dude.
Appreciate you, buddy. Have a good one. Greg Amsinger with us from MLB Network.
That's Gregory George to you.
That's right. Gregory George is a great name. Coming up next is Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne on the Gas House Gang.
Burleson swings and he drives the ball to deep center field. This has a chance. It's out of here. Up on Freeze's landing. Burleson's second home run of the year.
Yes, indeed. Burley got into the act as well. Jordan Walker with his seventh. Burley with his second. Cardinals lost it 9-3 to the Red Sox. Andre Pallante got knocked around. 7 runs on 10 hits. Joining us is Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne. He will be with us here shortly as the Cardinals are 8-7 on the year, a game out of first in the NL Central. The Guardians come in for 3 starting tonight, 6:45 start. Matthew Liberatore will throw the first pitch at that time. And in tomorrow's matchup, it'll be Michael McGreevy. I like the way this stacks up against the Guardians. On Wednesday, it's Dustin May. And May, who got off to a rocky start to begin the year, is now 1-2 on the season, but he still has some stats he needs to correct. He's made 3 starts. He's pitched 13 1/3, and he's been hit around a little bit. We're joined now by Mike Claiborne. Mike, we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly with this team, but here they are. They're 9-8, and they're trying to get things, or 8-7, I should say, trying to get things jump-started in 2026.
Steady as she goes. It's a long season, and, you know, it's kind of what you kind of thought. We would go through these phases where we'd see some good things, the production of Jordan Walker, and then we've seen our pitching maybe not be as good as they think they need to be. But that's part of what the season is about, and now it's time to push the reset button and go after these Cleveland Guardians for 3.
You know, I've said this, I've talked about it right at the start of the show with Tom here, that I almost, you know, feel bad that we keep going over this Jordan Walker thing over and over again, but it's really hard, Claibs, to not enjoy it and celebrate it in the moment, because this guy is just, he looks so much better than we have ever seen him. And it's not, the results are there. I mean, he's driving the ball. He's always hit it hard, but now he's driving it. He's showing us home run power. He's hitting to all fields. It's really hard for me not to feel really encouraged about what he's doing.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Chris. And I know that the home runs are certainly the showstoppers for everybody, and they pay attention. But I think going to all fields and going up the middle and going to the opposite field is something that we didn't see a lot of, and now he seems to be more comfortable with it. And talking to him on Friday, I asked him, you know, what are you doing different? And he basically said, I don't know, I'm just having fun. And I think really what it is, he's probably keeping that to himself only because he doesn't want to rely on it too much to the point where people try and make adjustments. And they will. Teams will make adjustments on him, and now it's up to him to make those adjustments back. But I think the fact that he's probably eliminated a lot of noise, you know, in his head with regard to everybody telling him he should do this and do that and, you know, all the other things mechanically that people talk about, he's just going out trying to play baseball. And so far, so good.
It's so impressive. And then you take a look around the lineup, Claves, and you say, all right, who's next? I mean, who's going to step up and be the number two slugger on this team? Is it Burley? Is it Herrera? Is it Gorman? You know, they do need some offensive production from other areas.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that, you know, after the three spot, you know, you have to say, is it Walker? Is it Gorman? I mean, you know, those guys are first-round draft choices, okay? And I think anytime you take a guy in the first round, you feel like he's going to have some long-standing impact on whatever team you're playing for. And so maybe it's their time to come together and justify why they were taken at the point they were in their careers. And both of them, guys coming out of high school, didn't have that minor league experience like some other people do. And so we'll see where it goes from here. But I'm looking forward to it. And that's the neat thing about this team. Every day you go to the ballpark, you're not sure what to expect other than having a good effort being put in by everybody on that ball club.
This is a comment from somebody who was watching us on Facebook. This is Jeff, and he wants to know why the Cardinals right now are playing with a short roster and why wasn't Wynn put on the IL for multiple reasons. And also, this is a three-part question. He wants to know if he's ever going to be a productive hitter, talking about Mason Wynn. We know his defense is there, but what would you say to Jeff?
Well, he got hurt. He got hit by a pitch on Friday. I think he'll be in the lineup today. So to put him on the injured list probably doesn't help anyone at this point, because he's going to be back available. And the question would be, who would you like to see called up in that situation to replace him, considering you have three guys that can play shortstop on your ball club, or really four when you think about Weatherholt, Urias, Fermin, and also Sejacy. So to bring up another shortstop probably doesn't help your cause as much. And, you know, where else would you like to see somebody be replaced? And I'm not sure if that works for such a short period of time that Mason Wynn's been down.
Cardinals put Richard Fitz of the Memphis Redbirds on the 7-day IL with a right lat strain today, so the pitching depth takes a bit of a hit. What did you think about a couple of turns through the rotation? I guess most recently in our mind is Andre Pallante getting knocked around.
Yeah, you know, it's when you look at what happened to him, it's always one inning that kind of comes apart, and the fact that, you know, you don't recover and the plan B doesn't work is concerning. But, you know, it's one outing. I think the first two starts, it was acceptable with regard to getting through the order twice and being reasonably effective. So, you know, we're just going to have to chalk this one up to one of those days. And everybody in the rotation is going to have one of those. I mean, we saw Dustin May have a couple of those days. And then on Friday night, he was really, really good. So it's part of the process. But I do think that the one concern I would have when you have a pitcher like Leahy, who's starting for the first time in his major league career on a regular basis, and you wonder how many innings can he give you, and then you follow him with Andre Pallante, who's a similar guy who's trying to figure out how many innings he can give you. That really puts a lot of onus on the bullpen to be ready and available, and you probably use them a lot sooner than you'd like to. So do you split those guys up and put somebody in between them where you don't have your bullpen being taxed back-to-back days like this? Or do you just try and ride out the storm and just see if one of those guys can step up and give you a little bit more?
Yeah, Libertor had a pretty good couple of starts at the beginning of the season. The opening day start, a second, the last one against Washington, not particularly good. As you look at his, you know, early start to the season, what are you seeing?
I see a guy who's getting better, and I think that, you know, being a starter, knowing you're going to pitch, you know, on a regular basis, and being able to use your repertoire of pitches, the sequence, I think, is what he's still trying to nail down and be more consistent with. But I like what I see, because he can throw seven different pitches. And so the question is, how do you use them effectively and making sure you don't use them all so early where everybody's figured out what you have and what you don't have?
Do you have any concerns about the bullpen? I mean, obviously there are some things going on there. Matt Swanson, you got to hope he can work his way out of it.
Yeah, you know what, Tom? And I thought, and you and I talked about this even during spring training, I thought that might be the strong suit for this ball club is the bullpen, because of the way they finished last year. But with that said, every bullpen goes through a high and low moment. I guess for me, I'm not as overly concerned because they're not walking people. Okay, now people say, well, they're putting the ball in play. Yeah, they are. But when you lose control, then you lose confidence. If you lose confidence, now we have a bigger issue to address. You know, when you have guys that are putting it in play, that's just because you're missing in certain zones. You know, your shape doesn't look like it needs to be. But, you know, you think about Swanson, you know, his velocity was good the other night. I mean, it wasn't like he had lost anything. He just was in the middle of the plate a little too much. But, you know, those things can be fixed. It's my concern when, as I mentioned, when guys start walking a ton of people, and then all of a sudden you're looking around, can anybody throw strikes? And we don't have that issue going for us right now, and I'm happy about that.
Claves, as we are now, I mean, what, it'll be 3 weeks. The season has been underway once we get to Thursday. So once we get through this this Cleveland series here, it'll be 3 weeks. Is anything that's happened in the first 2.5 weeks of the season been a surprise to you? Or do you feel like most of this you've expected, or is it a feel about right? How do you see it?
Yeah, no, it's about right. You know, the one thing that when you have young players that are going to play every day, you have to make sure that they don't beat themselves mentally. You know, the physical mistakes come with the game. You pick the sport, the physical mistakes, you understand that's how it works. It's the mental areas that you really concern yourself with, and how prepared people are, their attention to detail. And, you know, so far we haven't seen anything that creates a lapse in why, you know, a team doesn't win. Now, sometimes they're not able to execute moving a runner along and things of that nature, but you don't see guys throwing to the wrong base. You don't see guys having base running blunders and things that, you know, you work so hard at in spring training to make sure that when we start playing for keeps that, you know, that's not going to be an issue. And so far, so good on that front. I think we're right where I thought we would be. And, you know, I always take into account when maybe the pitching goes south or maybe the hitting isn't what it needs to be. But remember, we have a lot of time before we get to Flag Day where we really have an evaluation of what this team is.
I love Flag Day. Mike Claiborne with us. We have Ollie Marmol on the show tomorrow. Rob Serfolio, assistant GM, will follow him on the Gas House Gang. I love that. And you know what else I liked? You had Daniel Descalzo on your show today, Chris. Yep. And I loved that segment with Ricky. I thought that was really cool,
yeah,
Claves, what we're doing there.
It was a lot of fun. And we're trying to change up a few things, trying to get a coach on during the game. And Ricky and Daniel had a fun inning. A lot of things took place where D had to drop the headset because they had to look at a replay. A lot of things are going on in that inning. But I hope that from a listener standpoint that they can kind of get a better feel in how things are taking place in-game compared to pre- and post-game, just to actually hear what's going on and what these guys are thinking.
Yeah. You know, I love it, Claves. I know that people, and I was even one of these at the very beginning when they started to do these in-game interviews, and they tried it in spring training or maybe exhibition games where they had players doing interviews, and I thought, why are we bothering them in the middle of the game? They need to concentrate. I don't know. I feel like in baseball, it seems to work. These guys are good enough that they can do two things at once. They can concentrate, they can play the field, and they can still do these interviews and give us some real insight.
Yeah, I mean, they can walk and chew gum at the same time. I mean, but I think what happens, you know, there's a lot of standing around and a lot of watching. As you mentioned, they're trying to focus on the game and how can they be better at the next at bat or the next time they throw a pitch. And those sort of things are certainly in play. But I think for everyone, it's a unique situation that we're all trying to get accustomed to. Because if you think about it, players don't get interviewed in the games at any other time. I mean, this is the first time I'm sure any of these guys, and even coaches. You know, normally, if anyone's talking, it's normally the manager. Mm-hmm. When we have a bench coach like Daniel Descalzo and some other good guys on that ball club, from a coaching standpoint, it's different for them. And, you know, they want to make sure they're not tipping their hand on what they're thinking too much, because you never know what the opposition is doing. Now, granted, I don't know if anybody from the team we played this weekend was having someone monitor the broadcast to see if Descalzo was going to disclose some sort of state secret. But there does come a point where sports coaches and players are very cognizant about their surrounding and making sure they don't tip off on anything, because that one tip might be the difference in a win or a loss.
That's always been amazing to me, the game within the game in baseball. There's so much to pay attention to. Mike Claiborne, love having you on the show. Thank you so much for doing it today.
All right, fellas. Hopefully we'll see you guys at the ballpark. The weather is good. The Cleveland Guardians are a really good team. They feature two really good players in Garcia and Stephen Kwan. And come on out and hang out with us this afternoon and this evening. The weather's going
to
be great.
Let's go. Cardinals and Guardians. Thanks to Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne with Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman. This is the Gas House Gang. And we'll be back with Amy Markscores right after this.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Amy Markscores joins us now to talk about all things Blues hockey. Boy, oh boy. How about those Battlehawks, huh?
Yeah, what a comeback win for them yesterday.
How about those Battlehawks? Oh, hi, Amy.
Oh, cool. Hey. Did they come back and win?
They did. Yeah, twice came back. Yeah,
that's exciting.
It's pretty awesome.
You're a Battlehawks fan.
Love the Battlehawks.
I know you do. Blues hockey tonight at home against the Minnesota Wild. I know the season's over, but they still have to play it out, but the draft isn't over.
I know. That's what I have in my hand right now. I'm looking at the odds.
The Detroit Red Wings free fall. My goodness.
They were in first place in the Eastern Conference on January 24th, and I think they had a 12-point buffer. And they fell off the face of a cliff, and maybe the edge of a cliff, not the face of a cliff.
Edge of a cliff.
Yeah, I think it was the edge of a cliff.
Mm-hmm. Let's spend time on this.
But when you think about it, though, the Detroit Red Wings traded with the Blues to get Justin Falk. They're out of a playoff spot. The New York Islanders traded to get Braden Schenn. They're out of a playoff spot. So, hey, if you had to choose between being in the Blues position or either New York or Detroit, the Blues are in a better position, having been the sellers at that time, getting some draft picks. And as I said, in my hand right now, looking at the odds for who would get the number one overall draft pick, the St. Louis Blues have a 6% chance right now. The Vancouver Canucks, who are horrible and had been horrible all year long, so much at the bottom of the barrel that the Blues could not catch them with a rocket ship going down. And so they have a 25% chance of the overall draft pick.
Never say never.
Never say never.
Bulls had a 1% chance to get the number one pick and got Derrick Rose.
Chicago Blackhawks are up there with a 13.5% somehow.
They got that first-round pick from the Red Wings.
They do.
Which suddenly becomes a lot more attractive
when you get knocked
out of the playoffs.
Yeah. So I think, you know what? They're in the spot, for this to come out right, they're in the spot they deserve to be.
They
didn't play well. They didn't play well. And in fact, if anything, I could make a stronger argument that they should have been technically out of it before now, because it was only that muddy middle that allowed them to hang around as long as they could, because you can look at games that they needed to win, like against the San Jose Sharks, against the LA Kings. This is most recently Chris Kerber saying that LA Kings game a week and a half ago was a must-win game, and they didn't win. But you can also look at the four games this season they lost while leading with a minute left in the game, a minute or less. Two of those times where they lost with less than a minute left against the Dallas Stars. So there were so many opportunities for them to earn points. My goodness, how far into the season were the Blues before they were able to get an overtime or shootout victory? All of those lost points add up. So they're where they deserve to be, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It's time to bring in some youth and build a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the position they're in, right? I don't think that you can... Maybe we took that last playoff series a little too literally.
We did.
Like, oh man, this team is... They're just barely there. I mean, they're this close. And I think in hindsight, they're a lot further in the way than we thought.
Do you know the one thing that and Tom, I don't know how you feel about this, but one of the names that we've talked about that could get moved in the offseason is Jordan Binnington, because you have Joel Hofer as the ready to take the lead as the number one goaltender for the Blues. But I am concerned about the gap that is there.
When you go
into next season, which is going to be 84 games, by the way, Hofer's not starting 84 games, and the Blues don't have Colton Ellis anymore, traded him to the Buffalo Sabres. I feel like right now you need Jordan Binnington still.
Unless you can go find somebody to pair with Hofer. You got to have a good goalie tandem in this league. You can't just rely on one. Minnesota tonight, Pittsburgh on Tuesday, and that'll be Chris Pronger's book release.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. For the final home game. Then they go to Utah, and then we're on draft watch.
That's right.
With Amy Markscores. Let me give you a Gas House Gang congratulations. I know you've been hearing it on your marathon finish.
Oh, thank you.
Second
among 420 female competitors in the Go St. Louis Marathon. Congrats.
Thank you, sir.
Really, really well
Good
done.
Good job, Amy.
For Chris Ranji and Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd and Amy Markscores and Mike Claiborne and Greg Amsinger and all of our listeners, I'm Tom Ackerman. Thanks for joining us. Ollie Marmel and Rob Serfolio and Bernie Miklas tomorrow.
Let's go.
Many times, a person hires a law firm after an injury without doing research. It can be a big mistake or not. Sometimes, after you have hired a certain lawyer, you realize you made a certain mistake. But guess what? Just because you hire them doesn't mean you can't fire them. I'm John Morgan of Morgan & Morgan. If you think you've hired the wrong firm, you may have.